The old one.
So today is October 7th, 2014. We're at the home of Mary Catherine Hoover in Williams, Arizona. Mary has been very kindly going through the list of the people in the cemetery, and we had gotten to the Vercamps. Mm-hmm. And because it's such a big family and a fairly complex group of folks, I thought, well, we better just maybe talk about the Vercamps all in amongst themselves. I put together a little something here just of Oscar Joseph, brother of John G.
G, yeah.
And John G. married Catherine Muzz, and they had four children, Margaret, Peggy, Janet, Katie, and John Jr.
Uh-huh. And now, I didn't know which sequence they went in.
I don't know, and the sequence may be completely wrong here. That I don't know. And John Jr. married Mary Leary and had another John, Tersh, and
Steve,
then Steve, Mike, Susan, and Jane. And again, I don't know if the order here is probably not right.
Yeah, it's right, I think.
And then Mary passed away, and John remarried Elizabeth.
Betty Purcell.
Okay.
Was her last name. She used to work with me. I knew her before Jack knew her.
Well, should we start with Betty? What do you?
Well,
because I'm not sure she's on the list here.
But I think she is.
Oh, she is. What do you remember about Betty?
Well, Betty had lived in Florida, and she had a bad marriage, and she was in an accident. And her husband kind of blamed her, I guess. I'm not sure. I know that she came out here to get away from where she'd been living. And she was a bartender sometimes, and sometimes she ran motels. She ran the Williams Motel down the street here. And I don't know how she and Jack met, excepting that she did work at Grand Canyon. She started working at the laundry there, and then she went out to Tucson and she bartended at Tucson for a while.
Hmm.
And she was a good friend of and what was their names? Anyhow, she had a good friend who was also a bartender, and of course, they knew Jack. This lady and her husband knew Jack real well because they had worked at Grand Canyon at the old Hogan's place, and they had worked it for Fred Harvey. It was Marie and Tommy Parkins were Betty's friends, and both of them worked as bartenders off and on, but Tommy was a big man. The first time I saw him, he was patching the roof at Hogan's, the old Hogan's place, on the big building. And he yelled down and he said, are you enjoying the canyon? And we said, yeah, but we came here to work, so we're we're local people now. And anyhow, we talked to him a little bit. And then I got to know Marie because she was a hostess and she was a bartender at the Bright Angel.
So a couple questions, Mary. Where was Hogan's? Where was the house? Was that in Tucson he was working in?
No. Hogan's place was Dan Hogan's, the old orphan mine. But he also had had some little cabins there, and he had a curio shop. And Tommy did, he made jewelry. He made me some opal earrings, and I think he made me a ring one time.
Mm-hmm.
I gave all my jewelry away, and since I can't see it, I can't remember who gave it to me.
Oh.
But anyway, they were very kind people.
And where was Betty bartending in Tucson? Was she at the Legion?
At the Tucson Bar.
At the Tucson Bar, okay.
Yeah. Thurston's owned that.
Okay.
And she worked out there, and Jack did like to run in and have a drink now and then, and most likely that's how they met. I'm not sure.
So by this time, Rawell had been shut down?
Rawell was shut down, yeah.
Okay.
The people at Rawell bought the Hogan's place. at one time. Their name was Barrington, and they owned Rawell, and then they ran it for a while, and then they bought Hogan's Place, and eventually they closed Rawell because the government wanted to take it over. That was Dr. Bryant's big goal in life, was getting rid of Rawell. And it happened after he left, but anyhow, they did get rid of Rawell.
How did you first meet Betty?
Betty? She worked for us for a little while.
Okay, so you met her at the laundry?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you remember about her in those days at the laundry?
Well, she was a hard worker. She didn't like that kind of work. And I think that she probably had a bad back because of this accident that she'd been in. Anyway, Jack had lost Mary, and so they started dating, and they got together and married, and they adopted two girls, Kelly and Lisa. Kelly married Robert Martinez, and they had four boys. I can't remember the four boys' names, but they have four boys. And Robert passed away. And since then, she has married one of the Wadsworth boys. He's a highway patrolman down around Prescott. They lived at Humboldt, but I think they live at Dewey now. But anyway, he had two children, two boys also, so they have six in their family now. Lisa, I've lost complete track of. I don't know if anybody knows where she is. She married. I went to her wedding. It was a beautiful wedding at Sedona, right on Oak Creek Canyon, outside of Las Abrigadas. It was a beautiful evening and a beautiful wedding. And her husband was a very nice young man, but he had a job where he traveled all the time. And I think that she didn't work, and she was bored and unhappy because he wasn't home a lot. And they got a divorce, and I have no idea what happened to her since then. The girls probably know, because they kept contact with one another, but Sue and Jane have always, I think, kept contact with the girls.
So what can you tell me stories about Betty?
Well, she was a hard worker. She couldn't have children, and that's why she wanted children of her own, and Jack agreed with it. And they had room for them and everything, and the kids were pretty much grown, you know. Like, the boys had been in service, and Jane was through college, and Susie was in college or past that, I don't know which. But their kids were grown, so they adopted these two kids, and they raised them, and they gave them a good education. And Robert was in service, and when he really got sick, he had some kind of a head injury, and sometimes he was very clear and everything, and other times he would have problems, and he just eventually passed away from it, whatever it was he had. And she was raising the boys, and of course she knew the Wadsworths because they grew up at Grand Canyon too. And I think this boy is older than she is, maybe a little bit, but anyhow, I think it's a good match, and I hope they do well together.
Cool.
But
how does Robert Martinez, is he related to Bobby Martinez?
He's the son of Robert and Carol, Bobby and Carol Martinez.
Okay, got it.
And he was a little boy that when the bell would ring for recess, he'd go home. When he was first in school, he was always skipping out. They'd have to go hunt for him. And of course, his mother was working and his dad was working. There was nobody at home. But anyway, he was a cute boy. And he was actually a smart boy, but I don't know what kind of a... I don't know if it was a... he was in service when he had this accident, and I don't know if it was connected with service or if it was something on his time off. I have no idea. I do know about Jack's boys a little bit. Tersh was in the Army, and he was attached to the Judge Advocate's Office of the Army, and he served in that during his time in the Army. And Steve was in the Army, I think, and I know that Mike was in the Navy. I saw a picture of him and he looked like a little boy in a Navy suit. Mm-hmm. but anyhow, they all three served, and Jack served for a short time in service. He was in the Army, but they were having trouble because his dad had died, and his mother and Peggy were trying to run the store, and the boys were really kind of young to take over and do, and I think they got him out of service because of that. Hmm. Because his mother was getting up in years, and it was hard on Peggy to do everything too. I do know a little bit about Peggy. She was extremely interested in education. She went through college, and she was a teacher. She taught at the Canyon for a short time, but she taught in other places too. And when she got back to the Canyon, they were talking about building a high school there, and she knew Senator Hayden. The family was good friends with Carl Hayden's family, and she talked to him, and he got it put through Congress. And you know, the school at Grand Canyon is the last school. I don't know if it's the first school that was ever on the Park Service's land, but it's the last school. And it's being transferred now to Tucson, to the village of Tucson. But she worked so hard on everything to do with the school. She was for it. And she would argue with the men that were on the school board and tell them off. And she could do it in a nice way, but she'd do it. And she got her way about most things to do with the school. And she was really responsible for having a nice school and going past the sixth grade. They had a high school there. And Mr. Guthrie was the first superintendent that was over the whole school, Carl Guthrie. But Peggy was the one that helped hire him. He was down at Jerome. And Jerome, I think, was kind of a hard school. But anyhow, he came to Grand Canyon, and he did a great job. He loved music, and he got a band going.
Nice.
And he did so many things for the school. And he raised his son there. He had a son that was raised there. I don't know too much about them, excepting everybody loved Mrs. Guthrie. She was a first grade teacher. And they thought that she was a wonderful person, and she was a wonderful person. She had a sense of humor that you wouldn't believe, but she was a really good person. Our mail is here. It's late today, too. Anyway...
What do you remember about Jack Jr.?
He was always in a rush. And if the kids at the store were not doing anything or talking too much to one customer and not taking care of somebody else, he'd always go and tell them. Becky worked for him for a while, my goddaughter Becky. And she really liked working there, but then she got an offer from the Park Service, and it paid more money, and she just decided that she and Mike were getting married, and they'd get a house, because he was working at the post office, and the post office only had two houses, and they were already taken, so that was a help for them. Of course, there were some ladies, well, there were some men that worked at the Park for the Park Service. The ladies' husbands worked at the Park Service, and they worked at the post office. Mrs. Cunningham, Lucille, that's the mother. Alice Cunningham worked at the post office, and Grace Moore, I think, worked at the post office. But their husbands worked for the Park Service, so they didn't have to worry about housing.
Right.
And Freddie Bart was brought out to be secretary for the GEO for Fred Harvey, and he is from Kansas City, and I think perhaps Walter Rouser might have known them back there. because he came out to be Mr. Rouser's secretary eventually. And then he got a chance to go to the post office, and he ended up being the postmaster at the post office for a number of years. But to get back to the Ver camps, Jack had two Indian men that worked for him for years and years, Donald Longhoma and David Kivama. Donald's passed away, and his wife has passed away. But at Mike's funeral, their granddaughter was there.
Oh.
She worked for the Park Service for years. She was in charge of the picking up the money and taking care of the gate, and getting the personnel out there and everything. And Edith was, she kept house for Betty and Jack. Betty ran a motel, but she didn't have to do the maid's work, and I guess she wasn't used to doing that. She didn't want to be a maid to anybody. But anyhow.
What was the hotel?
Betty ran the Williams Motel down here.
Okay, here.
Here in Williams. And we used to come down here. They got TV down here before we did. Didn't have much TV, but it was, we didn't have any, so anything was better than nothing. So we'd come down, we'd get a sack full of hamburgers and go lay across the bed and watch TV. And then we'd give her back her room so she could rent it again at night if she wanted to. But we'd come down and rent a room, and the girls and Myra and I would come down and watch TV. And then we finally got TV at Grand Canyon, so that worked out.
When did the TV arrive at the canyon? What time was that?
1962.
Roughly? 62?
Uh-huh. Okay. And we had two stations. We had one station, then they got two, and eventually they got more, of course. Okay. But it was beamed from Bill Williams Mountain up to the Fire Watch Tower at I want to say Mather, but it's not Mather.
Hopi?
Hopi Point. And that's right across from the, where the mine was. Right across the road from there. It was the tallest place they had to do it. And it worked fine. But it worked better than some of the TV we have now. Half of my stations are off.
Mm-hmm.
But
so Janet and Katie, I'm just kind of going through the four kids of John Sr.
Now, Katie married a man named Tom Martin. And they lived at, it's in New Mexico. They lived on a big ranch, and they had a store.
Hmm.
And I think that some of the kids still have the store. I don't know. One of their daughters came down. She worked at Ver Camps when Becky worked there, and when Becky got married, she was one of her maid of honor or something.
Can I get you some water?
No, mm-hmm. It's okay. It just does this all the time. Yeah. Anyway. Katie's girl came down and worked. The other girl moved to Texas right after I came, and I don't know anything about her. I don't know about her family or anything. I know that Katie and Tom are both dead.
Okay. And Janet?
John.
So there was Peggy and Katie and John Jr. and
that's Jack.
And Janet.
And Janet. Janet was the one, I think, that went to Texas.
Okay.
I don't know anything about her. And she might not have gone to Texas, but that's what I have in my head. She went there.
And what do you remember about Mary? Jack's first wife.
Mary was a little Irish girl. That's where the boys get their freckle faces and the red hair.
Hmm.
Mary had a sense of humor that was out of this world. She loved to read. She read everything that came along. She started one shelf, and she'd send one of the kids down with a pillowcase and say, fill it up. And so they'd get like 12, 15 books in the A shelf. The next time they'd go a little bit further down, and maybe it was A and B. But she read the whole library.
Is that right?
And we got new books in. She always wanted to be on the list so she could get a new book to read. Because some of them she had read two or three times. But that's what she did. Every afternoon she had a straight chair. And she'd turn it around backwards and lean over it and turn the pages on the book. And they used to have a lot of parties. And I can remember one party where she and Jack were invited, and Jack was late getting ready, and it was a Halloween party. And so she dressed as a clown, not a clown, a beggar. She had an old sack over her shoulder and an old slouch hat, and she had on a wig and had her face made up like a man's, and she had an old coat on that was all torn up. And she knocked at the door, and she said, I need something to eat. And Dr. Snare went to the door, and he said, well, we're having a party. Can I bring you a dish or something? And he didn't even recognize us. Here was this little lady. She wasn't very tall. And pretty soon she laughed, and he knew who she was. That's all it took. Because she had a laugh that was all her own.
Did she?
And their daughter's name was Jane Rosalind. And we had Jane Rosalind in our scout troop. And Myra and I went up to get her correct name because they said you can't put Boo on. That's the nickname. We need her her real name. So we went up and we asked Jack, what's Boo's real name? He said, Boo's real name? I don't know what Boo's real name is. He went to the bottom of the steps and yelled, Mary, what's Boo's real name? She said, Jane Rosalind. Don't you even know what your daughter's name?
Oh.
But they get to be called by a name and that's it. We have that in my family too. That one of my brothers is called a nickname and to this day he goes by it. And it was because I couldn't pronounce his name.
Did Steve, Mike, or Susan have nicknames as well? Because
no.
There was Tersh and Boo.
Tersh was called Tersh because of... he was the third, and Tertius in Latin is the
Tertius,
third.
Tertius, sure. Tertius, yes.
That's why he is called Tertius. Steve was always Steve, and Mike was always Mike.
Okay.
And, of course, that goes with their real names, Stephen and Mike, Michael. But they had a Uncle Putt, who was Mary's brother, and he was a bellman down at the Bright Angel. And Uncle Putt would babysit them sometimes. And it was very comical. He was supposed to get them something to eat. So here we come, Uncle Putt. Here we come. I think Jane was the littlest one. And she would go first, and then Mike, and then Steve, and then Tersh, and then Uncle Putt. And they go down. And at that time, the bar was a service bar, but it was off of the fountain. And so he would take them down, and he'd get his beer from the service bar, and he'd get their milkshakes or whatever he was going to feed them. And sometimes they'd have a couple of them because he liked his beer. But anyway, they would come down, and we'd see him coming in. And that was, I don't think that Susie was born yet then. She's the same age as Karen. So she was probably born in 47 or 48. She was born in December 15th of 47.
Jane was.
Susie
was.
I don't know why I remember that date, but I do. And I don't know when any of the rest of them were born, but anyway, that one I do know.
So Mary had a good laugh, and so Jack was always busy, always on the go. Was Mary the same way? She was a voracious reader.
Yeah. Like I said, she read everything in sight. And I used to go up and stay with the kids sometimes when they'd go someplace. She hated ironing. And every once in a while they'd be going, and her sister-in-law Katie had girls too, but her girls were always starched, and their little dresses were always really up to date.
Was that Putt's wife?
That was Tom Martin's wife.
Oh, okay.
Katie.
Sorry. That going that way. Got it.
Anyhow, they would go up and visit Tom Martin's, and she couldn't send her Jane Rosalind up there with a unironed dress. So I used to sometimes I'd iron their dresses when they were going up to see their aunt. But I thought that was funny. But then there's a lot of people who didn't like to iron. But that's one thing I never minded doing, so I'd always do it for her. And Jack would bring them down, and then he'd come and get them, and so they could go all dressed up in their little frilly little dresses instead of their jeans and their T-shirts, which they wore just like the boys did.
Hmm.
And Jack always used to say that he raised 5 kids on the edge of the canyon, and he didn't lose one of them. None fell in. But they had to clean out in front of the store every day. The boys had to. And then Donald Longholm's granddaughter picked up the yard and cleaned around the building, swept the sidewalk and stuff when she was a young girl. And then, of course, she went to work for the Park Service, and she didn't have to do that anymore. But anyway, they were very close-knit with their help. And sometimes they'd have, well, I can remember going to a party at the Elta Bar. They had the side dining room, and I think it was Jack's birthday. But I know everybody was very happy that evening. Let's see. I can't remember. I think that Peggy smoked. In fact, I know she smoked, because they said when she would, she never had the traders bring stuff and stay and go over it with her. She went over. She knew when it was good jewelry and when it was bad, and she would always look at it and decide what was good and what was bad, and she'd give them back what she didn't want, and they would come and put down what she took, and they'd take care of it that way. But and she'd inventory it, put it out, and price it and everything. But she went into the store when her dad died and helped her mother. And Jack was old enough, he was helping some too. But I don't think that, well, then he went into service. And I think that's why they got him out of service, was because it was too much for the two women to do. Mm-hmm. And Muzz had lived down in, she raised her family actually in Flagstaff. They went to St. Mary's School in Flagstaff, the grade school, and then they went away to boarding schools for the high school and colleges. But they had there's a house down there. I can't remember which one it is, but I think it's right there on San Francisco Street. But I don't know which house it is. It's been pointed out to me 100 times, but they all, when you're not really looking that close, or you're driving yourself while you don't look that close, and I just don't remember which one it is. But she stayed down there, the kids, and she came up in the summertime. And when Mary came up, she and her sisters came up from Tucson. Mary's father was a doctor. He was a little man, and his name, of course, was O'Leary, and he wore a beret. He always wore a beret on his head, like a French beret. And I only saw him, I think, one time, or maybe I just saw a picture of him. I don't know. I can't remember actually meeting him, but I have an impression of what he looked like in my head. So I really don't know if I just met him at a party or maybe up at Verkamp's house. I don't know. And I don't even know how long he lived, how old he was when he passed away. But he was from Tucson, and he was a doctor down there. And the mother would bring the girls up, and they'd work in housekeeping or as waitresses or wherever they could get a job in the summertime. And they stayed in tents. that's how she got acquainted with Jack. Mary got acquainted with Jack because they were always there in the summer. But she liked to party, and what did you have to do? We had one show a week. We had church once a week. You had the library to go to. Sometimes they had a square dance or something, but you couldn't get any radio reception. Up until 62, there was no TV. So it was, you had to make your own fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people did.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go to a lot of parties because I usually worked in the evening. And when you worked in the evening, you just didn't get invited because they knew you were working. You weren't going to come anyway.
Right.
So, but I wasn't really that much of a party person anyway, but I always had things to do.
But it sounds like Mary may have drunk to excess, maybe. I mean, I don't be careful how I word this, but
I'm not hearing you.
It sounds like Mary may have drunken a little too much.
She did drink too much. A lot of people at Grand Canyon drank too much, but she had a convulsion because of alcoholism, and that's what killed her.
Mm.
And I think Steve was there with her when she died.
Mm.
But she was at the hospital, and like Dr. Henry said, when you're in a small town, you lose your friends. When you're in a city, they're your patients.
That's right.
He said, I can't stand to be here anymore, and he left.
Yeah.
He lost Mary, and he also lost Hank Draper. Hank Draper was the manager at the Bright Angel at that time, and that was really hard for him to lose those two friends.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was with Hank Draper right before he died,
mm.
and that was really sad. And I think that in her heart of hearts, Mrs. Draper blamed him for his death.
Mm.
She didn't say anything really bad about him, but she never said anything kindly about him either.
Mm.
And he was a good doctor.
What do you remember of Mike?
Well, Mike ran the store a lot like his dad did.
Okay.
He made sure that everybody was working and things got put out so people could see him, and the customer was to be looked after. And Becky always said he was a good boss, but and that wasn't why she left him. It was because there was more money where she was going, and she could get housing.
Housing,
you know, there was some other considerations.
Hmm.
And I don't know. We had a lot of alcoholism at Grand Canyon, and I knew a manager that was there for years, and I never realized that he was an alcoholic. And then we had one man that was a friend of Daggett Harvey's, went to school with Daggett Harvey, and he was on Skid Row out in L.A., had nothing. He came to Grand Canyon without even a change of clothes. And but Daggett Harvey was a very kindly man. He was very considerate of his people. And he went out there and he said, I'll give you a job and I will make sure that you can work your way up as long as you do not drink. And I went to this man's room one evening. I had to go down and tell him something or something. And I went down to his apartment, and the first thing I saw when I came in the apartment was these two full bottles sitting on the coffee table. And I thought, oh my goodness. And he saw me looking at them and he said, no, Mary, as long as those caps are on those bottles, I'm safe.
Mm.
And I thought that was a good way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's
but,
right. That's right.
Anyhow, he was a good man.
Mm. Mm.
And he became a vice president of the company eventually.
Is that right? Is that right?
So he did get to work his way up.
Uh-huh.
He retired and he went to California, and he had a friend. she was a widow lady. Her husband died at Grand Canyon. And she stayed up there for a long time. And then she moved to California. And they were good friends. And she lived at the bottom of the hill. And this man lived at the top of the hill. And she'd look up every morning to see if his light was on. And one morning it wasn't on. And she went up there. And he'd passed away during the night. Mm. I don't know what he passed away from. But it wasn't from drinking. Because he promised and he kept his promise. He didn't drink. But they were just good friends and they kept in touch because they lived close to one another. Sometimes they'd go out to have dinner together and one thing and another, but that's as far as it went. I don't think he had ever married. And she was, her husband, I think, might be buried at the canyon, but I'm not sure. I can't remember what their last name was. I can't even think of her first name, in fact. Childs was the last name. But anyway, they went out there and lived.
What other fun stories do you remember about the Verkamps?
The Verkamps and all the management at Fred Harvey's were good friends as a rule. And like for Muzz's birthday and stuff, sometimes they'd have parties at the Elta Bar or have a dinner or a party in the side dining room or something. But I know that I always thought that Muzz Verkamp was the most ladylike lady I ever knew. She had beautiful clothes. She took care of them. And I can remember the lady in blue. We had a salesman come down from Utah. He sold beautiful clothing. And you could have them tailor-made for you. And his name was Wendell Friendly, and he was with the Utah Tailoring Company. And he would come down and show his wares at the girl's dorm. But he would take what he thought Mrs. Verkamp would like over to her home and show them to her at her home. She had this, it was a suit, had a coat with it, had a hat with it, had blue shoes with it, blue gloves, and a blue purse.
Wow.
And she was beautiful in it. And I always thought of her as a lady in blue.
Yeah.
But she had beautiful flowers. She loved flowers around her house. And when Becky would go to school, she went right past their house. The Buford and Meyer lived on Apache Street, and their house was right across from the school on B Street, Boulder Street. And Becky would go along and pinch off flowers and go and knock at her door and say, "I brought you a bouquet of flowers, Mrs. Burke." And of course, Muzz was probably watching her pick him. She never scolded her for it or anything. She just thought it was cute that she brought her a bouquet of flowers.
That's nice.
And I had some beautiful handkerchiefs. At one time, everybody used handkerchiefs. There was no such thing as Kleenex. And Mrs. Verkamp must have had drawers of handkerchiefs. And when she passed away, they gave a whole bunch of her things for the library to sell in their thrift shop. And I think I bought most of the handkerchiefs, despite the fact that my mother used to send me a handkerchief in a letter every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a drawer full of them already. But they were beautiful handkerchiefs. And I still have some of them.
I use one. I got one in my back pocket.
Yeah.
Very handy.
If my mother could find a small scarf, she would put it in a letter to me, too. But she was always sending me little things like that.
Nice.
But anyway, I thought that Muzz was the essence of a beautiful lady.
Hmm.
Peggy was Peggy. She could argue a man down as easy as any other man could do it. If she was on the school board and she didn't agree with something, she'd let them know it. And she did more for Grand Canyon, I think, than any lady that ever lived up there, because she always worked for things to, not particularly for the park itself, but for the community. She was always working for the community to do this or that. And she'd take her own time and go to sessions in the legislature where they were trying to do something to education, and she didn't think it was right, she'd go down and tell them. Hmm. And Tersh, when he got out of the service, he was a lawyer, and he became the county, what is it when you're the law for the county?
County attorney?
Attorney. And then he went into state legislation, and then he had some problems, and I don't know what he does now. He's probably proceeding with his law. Hmm. Steve became a commissioner, and that's a federal job, and he was in charge of northern Arizona, so he traveled from Flagstaff to Tuba City to Cameron to Grand Canyon to Williams. He had an office at, when they closed the post office and built a new one at Grand Canyon, that was made into the courthouse, and that's where he had his court. And of course the Park Service used it as their court too, because they had a ranger that was in charge of law enforcement, and sometimes he would hear minor things that would happen and judge on them, but he wasn't a judge. But Steve was actually a federal judge. And there were others that were federal judges. There was Mr. Roberts, I think he was the first one. Hmm. And Hickernail, Fred Hickernail was one of them. And of course Steve, I can't remember who was before Steve. Anyhow, over the years they didn't really have too many different ones. Mm-hmm. And then of course Mike was a flyer in the Navy, and he studied architecture, and he really wanted to go into that, and yet he never pursued it after he got finished with school. He was very artistic. He could write. Someplace I have a story that he wrote about he and his brothers and his dad and Buford went down to Supai, and how tired they were. When they got up to the truck, they just laid down on the back of the truck bed and went to sleep, and all the jolting even didn't wake them up coming back. But they had a heck of a good time down there. And they liked to do things. And that family sort of adopted Buford, and he was always going up to see Jack about this or that. And when they had a discussion, they get together and discuss. But the boys were always really nice kids. They used to come to the library. And when Mary died, sometimes they'd come and they'd just stay after library hours and talk to me. Hmm. And but then I had two or three families that lost a father or a mother in their family, and they'd come and talk to me. I guess I was a part of the town, but I wasn't. They felt it was fine to come and say something to this old lady. I wasn't that old at the time, but anyway, they'd come and talk to me at the library. I worked at the library for 20 years. I think 22, actually, but anyway, I was there a long time. But when I came down here, I had to give it up. But mm-hmm. The Verkamps were always very good about giving books. And like I say, Mary was such an avid reader. And
you mentioned Peggy as being very dedicated to the community and would really take no gruff in mm-hmm. a nice way. That made me think about her father and her mother as John and Muzz. Did you see characters of Muzz in Peggy as the child
yes.
of her mother?
Yes. They lived together and they did everything together. Mr. Kennedy was the manager at the Bright Angel for 49, well, he worked for Fred Harvey for 49 years, but he ended up being the manager of the Bright Angel, and he was a very good friend of the Verkamps. Well, in his 49th year up there, he got sick, and he had a heart problem, and he had to get out of the altitude. And the night before he died, Peggy and Muzz were down in Phoenix. I think it was Phoenix. Anyhow, they were down, and they had dinner with him. And he said he was going to go home and read the paper and get some rest. And so they went to their motel or hotel wherever they were staying. And the next morning, the maid went in, and Mr. Kennedy was sitting in the bed with the paper in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dead. But what a way to go, to spend a good evening with friends. And I have a different feeling for death than a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. And usually I don't. If they've had a good life, I think, bless you, and may you be in God's hand, and I don't mourn them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've enjoyed them as people in their lifetime. And even my father, when he died, I didn't cry for him. He had a heart attack when I was small. Mm-hmm. And they said he wouldn't live a year. And when he lived 30 years, I thought, oh, how fortunate we were.
Yes.
And I didn't cry for him for years. But I miss him.
Mm, sure.
I think I miss my father more than I ever miss my mother, although we were all close. And my mother told my sister-in-law that I was the best of her kids because I never asked for anything.
Mm.
And I tried not to because I knew they had a hard time.
Mm.
But I don't know. It just
That's a nice, like you say, it's a nice way to end a nice life.
Yeah.
With
my father went to church that morning.
Hmm.
They were Catholic. They went to Mass. It was on a Friday, and they had a first Friday of the month, I think, Mass or something. And they'd gone and they came home down a very busy street. My father was not supposed to drive. He drove home, and it was right at the time when, well, my brother was going to work. He was going one way, and my folks were coming the other way. And he waved at him, honked the horn at him, and Dad waved back, and they came on home. They had their breakfast, and he went in to listen to the news. He always listened to the news on the radio. He didn't like TV news. And so he always listened to it on the radio, and my mother was washing the dishes. And he said, Katie, I'll be right there to dry him. And she heard him turn the radio off. And she heard a great big sigh.
Hmm.
There was a kitchen, the dining room, and the living room. And he was in the living room, so he was the third. He was in a room away from her. But she heard him sigh.
Hmm.
And she knew. She went running to him, and he was gone.
Hmm.
But what a way to die. Yeah. He'd just been to church. He'd talked to God that morning. And he had
waved
a good
at his
life,
son,
and my mother and dad were very close. They hardly ever did anything one without the other.
Mm.
You know, they always went together to do things. And
nice.
So I kind of feel that way about my friends. I don't mourn Jack. I don't mourn Betty, and I don't mourn Mary,
mm-hmm.
because they were good friends. We had good times together. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was a good feeling to be with them.
Yeah.
And
it sounds like the Verkamps were a very strong part of a community at
they
the South
were,
Rim.
Whenever Jack Verkamp raised more money for the March of Dimes.
Is that right?
At that time, it was just coming in, and he had something going every weekend for the March of Dimes.
Hmm.
And one thing was out at Toussaint, one thing was a dinner someplace, and then they have a taxi dance someplace, or they'd have a movie or put on a show or something. But every weekend there was something going on for the March of Dimes.
Hmm.
And at that time, if you got a tip for 25 cents off of a table when you were waiting tables, you were getting pretty good money.
Hmm.
And money was scarce. But even with these little things like a dime a dance thing, he would sometimes turn in $2,000.
Wow.
In that little community.
Wow.
It was a small community. They didn't have Maswick or Lake Avapai or Thunderbird or any of those buildings.
Mm.
All they had was the Altavar, the Bright Angel, and the Altacamp.
Mm.
And Bear Camps.
And Ver,
of course.
Well, they
but
had.
It wasn't a hotel, sure.
Yeah, they had Babbitt's and Bear Camps, but
right.
Anyhow, there wasn't a lot of things going on there to raise money with, and I thought that was fantastic.
Really?
But they also, I think that. Well, I don't know who all it was, Myra and Peggy, and a bunch of them got together, and they sold war bond saving stamps at school.
Hmm.
You could buy 10-cent ones and fill up a book, or you could buy 25-cent ones and fill up a book, and then you could turn it in and get a bond.
Hmm.
And it amounted to $18.75 for a bond. And a lot of kids got bonds by just saving their pennies at home.
Nice.
And
yeah.
And they were so proud of themselves when they got one. And I know that Myra used to go, she was one of them that went to school and sold, I don't know how many days a month, I think she probably sold them on two times a month. And there were usually two of them went. Sometimes Martha Terry went with her, but Peggy never went. And I don't think Mary ever went. But anyhow, they sold stamps, and that's the way they helped pay for the war effort, you know. And all those little amounts added up. Becky had an old war bond that her grandparents had sent her when she was a little girl. I don't know, it was her birthday or something. And one time Myra had me go out, she wanted an old dress for something, and she thought it might be in, she stored her stuff in my garage. And I was out there looking for it, and I thought, gee, that looks like a bond. It was the right size and everything, and it had U.S. government on it, and it had Becky's name on it, and it was from her grandma and grandpa.
Hmm.
And so I opened it, it was a bond. And Becky needed some tires on her car right then, and she said, oh, that was a heaven-sent thing because I didn't have the money for the tires.
That's great.
And it came to $150-some.
Wow.
So she was able to buy two tires at that time. So, you know, that goes way back to when they were in school. And I think Peggy was probably one of them that thought that was a good idea and helped them get started with it.
Hmm.
But I don't know that she ever sold them because she was always busy at the store, but she worked right along with Jack, and she worked right along with Michael. They worked together, and she's the one that chose the jewelry, and she'd just have them come in and dump everything on her desk, and she'd say, that's no good. This is a good one. And then she'd give all this one back to the salesman.
Well, she knew her clientele and what people were looking for.
And Jack had a corner. It was called JJJ, Jack's Junk Jewelry. And he said everybody should be able to come in and buy something, even if it was a little kid that wanted maybe some little thing, and they should be able to come in and buy something. So he had this Jack's Junk Jewelry corner. And some of the things were pretty good, pretty neat anyway. But
the prices were lower.
And the kids could afford it.
And the kids could afford it, yeah.
Or mom could, on the spur of the moment, if she only had 50 cents in her purse, she could buy something when her daughter was yelling, Mom, I want something.
Right.
And then he always took care of that.
Nice.
He always had this one little corner. And Becky loved it when she got to work in the jewelry when she was there, because I have a bowl in there that she gave me one year when she was working there. It's a black pottery bowl. I don't know. Was it San Ildefonso that made those Indians? I can't remember. But anyhow, it was some New Mexico tribe that made them. And I really cherish it, but she liked to buy things there. Mike said, you spend all your money on jewelry from Vercamps, but Now she's loaded with jewelry.
Did they give a discount to the locals?
Yes.
Nice.
And of course we got a discount at Fred Harvey's too. If you work for them, you got a special discount. Parks, everybody in the park, they were residents, got discounts. The only place we didn't was at the grocery store.
Oh.
And of course the grocery store couldn't quite do that.
Right.
But
fun.
It wasn't that Babbitts weren't good, because they were. They did give you, like if you were going to try to raise money for something, they would put something in for it. Maybe a donation toward it, or something you could use for a raffle or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At one time they had bingo parties at the canyon.
Hmm.
The park didn't like it, and they finally made them quit. They couldn't do it for money, so the guys would go out and try to get different places to donate something.
Nice.
And they put it on the bingo table, and you could pick out what you wanted.
Was this at the community center?
Uh-huh, at the community center.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes Jack would call for that. I have a set of 6 steak knives, and I have a carving set.
Nice.
That I won. I never had won anything in my life at bingo.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a very good gambler. Anyhow, that night, I had 1 dime left, and Myra had 3. And she said, here, let's play 2 more games. It was a dime a game.
Hmm.
And so she kept 2 of her dimes and gave me 1, so I had 2. And I won the next 2 games. So I got the steak knife. I still have them.
Hmm.
And the carving set, it has a bone handle on the knife. It's quite a nice carving set. And anyway, I still have those.
So were the bingo games done as a fundraiser for?
As a fundraiser, yeah.
March of Dimes, or?
Sometimes it was like we were going to have a Halloween party. We would have, sometimes we'd get a movie, a Halloween movie. Sometimes we didn't have the money to get the movie, so they'd have like apple, dunking for apples and stuff. Games of all kind like that.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't cost any money, just the apples and the prize. And so they would have those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'd raffle off things. I still don't like raffling.
Mm-hmm.
I buy raffle tickets all the time, but I never win anything. But I just buy it. I might as well just give them the donation and say, here.
Yeah.
But,
take the cash.
Yeah.
Yeah,
somebody
well,
else
that's
can
what
win it.
It is. It's a donation. Cool. Catherine
is Muzz.
Muzz, that's right.
She died at 90.
Right. And Jack, that's John.
John
and Muzz's son.
Uh-huh, and that's the senior next to him, and that's
right.
Biddy and Mary O'Leary. And Oscar's wife was named, what was her name? Rosalind?
Yeah.
Rose W. She lived to be quite elderly, too. She was 84.
Do you remember her?
I can remember a very well-dressed, elegant-looking lady. I never saw her, I don't think, but once.
Mm.
And she was a figure of a society lady.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where she lived, but she used to come, and everybody would be real excited because Aunt Rose was coming.
Huh.
And they always knew they were going to have a good time when Aunt Rose was there.
Really?
But I never went to anything that involved them. And when they went out to eat, they ate at the Alta Bar, and I only worked there in the dining room not too long, you know. And so I didn't really come in contact with her.
Mm.
Excepting I have this vision of her in this summer hat.
Hmm.
And this flowing dress. I don't know.
Hmm.
I just have that vision of her.
Hmm.
And it's, I think she had red hair. But I'm not sure about that either.
Okay.
But
and she was 84.
Yeah, she was.
She passed away in 69.
He died quite young and.
Yeah, he was 65. That's right. Hmm.
So she outlived him about 18 years, yeah. Something like that.
And then there's Kathy there. Was that Katie? That should be Katie, I wonder.
Katie was...
No, that's Wadsworth. I'm sorry. No, we've gone right out of the Vera camps. Okay. So she was an infant. I'm sorry. This is here.
I don't know her. I should have known her. No, she was an infant.
Infant, yeah.
That's why I don't know her.
And then?
There was a family of Wadsworths up there. Donald Warden, he worked for the Fred Harvey Maintenance. I think he was a painter. I'm not sure. He was a little man, very quiet, never had much to say. And Eunice Ayers Warner was a... Eunice Ayers Warner. Huh. That must have been one of Mrs. Ayers' kids. I knew Ayers, but the Ayers family, but I don't remember Eunice Ayers Warner. Victor Wadahamaji. He was Elmer Wadahamaji's, I think it was Elmer Wadahamaji's son. He had Victor and Anna and Rebecca. Anna worked for us for a long time at the laundry. I don't know what she's doing now. I don't know if she's even working anymore. Victor was already in his 60s, wasn't he, when he died? I know he worked for
I
the
think
parks.
She's passed, has Anna?
Elmer died in 72. Elmer Walker.
Do you remember him, Elmer?
Yes. He went out to Supai to Hilltop, and there was a terrible storm, and they didn't find his body for 7 years. And they knew he had to be dead. But they found the truck, and they didn't find him. And they wouldn't pay off, and the girls took care of the funeral and stuff, and they really didn't have the money to do it. Well, Victor helped them too, but they really didn't have the money to take care of his funeral, and he was buried at Drift. I thought he was buried at Drift Fence, but he must have been buried out at the cemetery. Anyhow, Rebecca died. Her daughter, Misty Blue, died.
That's
and then
right.
I think the next year or so she died. She always worked in the curio shops, and Anna always worked in the background. Anna had a hair lip, and she didn't like to be in public, but she was the sweetest girl, and she was a hard-working girl. She had two children. And I think that Rebecca just had Misty Blue. And I think Victor has a family, but I don't know his kids at all. I knew him, and I knew Roseanne, because Roseanne, his wife, worked for us when she first came to Grand Canyon.
Did she?
She was from Winslow or Holbrook. Her name was Roseanne Dixon. And I know they have had children, but I don't know their children at all. But every time I see Roseanne, she always has to come up and hug me.
Aww.
I haven't seen her now for several years, but I always liked her. She was always a sweet girl. Her aunt worked at the Canyon. And for some reason, I can't remember who she married, but she married somebody up there, and then they left. But Roseanne stayed there, of course, because she was married to Victor. And she was from a different tribe than he was from. And they said, oh, they'll always be fighting, but I don't think they ever fought. Victor was such a nice man. He was a young man when, you know, when I knew him, but he was very nice. And Roseanne just was a very pleasant person to be around. She never... when you told her to do something, you knew it was going to get done. Hmm. You know, you didn't have to follow up and make sure it got done, because she did it. No sass, no, I don't want to do that today. She just did what she was asked to do, and she was very pleasant. But I've lost track of all those people now, because I don't go up there anymore. Mm. I was surprised when Victor died. Anna says, I lost all my family. I lost Misty Blue and Rebecca, and her father and her mother were gone, and so she doesn't have anybody anymore but her kids. Mm. And Victor's kids, I guess. But they were this. They lived in Park Service housing. I don't know where Anna lived. And I don't know where Rebecca lived. But I imagine that they lived in the Fred Harvey housing, because they'd gotten more housing by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. After them comes Christy Weber. She was a secretary, and her husband worked for the Park Service or the Forest Service. I don't know which. I think he worked for the Park Service. Anyhow, she was a very good secretary, and she got to be the secretary to the GEO. And she says, this dumb kid gets a job just like this. I don't know what my boss was thinking of, but she was very efficient. He said she was a very good person, but she died quite young. I think they had one child. Yeah. And I don't know whatever happened to him. And I think the little girl was maybe, well, she wasn't very old. Maybe she was just at the beginning of school, or maybe she wasn't even in school yet. But Christy was only 44 years old, and she died.
So, and she was secretary to the general manager, Fred Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Everybody liked Christy.
Mm.
She was a really nice girl. Then we have West Kagame. She's buried at that. June West Kagame is buried at Supah, it says.
Right, she was an infant.
Yeah.
That was 1948.
There was a big family of West Kagames.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had hair lips. And Mrs. Ernst got somebody down in Phoenix to agree to take care of them if she would get them there. So she got airplane tickets and took them out to the airport. She made arrangements with a friend to come and meet them and take them to the hospital. And some of these people would not get their kids up in time to go and meet the plane.
Oh.
And it was kind of sad, because Alberta was so into helping. She was such a... she was so hurt by the community of Grand Canyon. Fred Harvey's, I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened between the Harveys and her husband. Maybe he talked back to them. Joe was quite, he'd say what he had to say, but I don't know what happened. She had been a dancer when she was a young woman, and she met Joe. They were from Chicago, and Joe was working for Fred Harvey, and they sent him out, and he became a buyer for the jewelry. He bought the jewelry and the stuff for, like, the Hopi House and the Elta Bar and stuff. For years, he was a buyer for them. And she never really had to work, but she did a lot of things in the community, and she was real involved with the getting a... they have a group called a ministry in the national parks, or something to that effect. And she was real involved with getting a minister at Grand Canyon. We had a priest, but they had a community minister, and usually he was Methodist or Baptist. And I think she was Methodist, and they were, so she usually chose a Methodist one. But anyway, she and Joe lived up over the Hopi House, And we were out on the porch at the LDR one day, and this man said, "Do you girls live here?" And we said, "Yes." And he said, "Are those happy hoppy undies up there in the window?" Alberta didn't have a dryer, and she'd get up real early and do the wash and hang it out on this one shelf up above the Hopi house.
Oh my gosh.
And we laughed about that for a month. Happy hoppy undies. Anyway, Alberta had these kids' hair lips taken care of. There's still some of those kids around that she had operated on, but you can tell if they're from the same family because some don't have it done.
That was nice that she organized all that. And
she really loved the Indians. And she was always trying to help somebody. And Byron Harvey sent his son out. This was Byron III. Hmm. He was a college boy. Didn't have one iota of common sense. And they sent him out, and he was supposed to live on what he made as a clerk. And Alberta would bring his laundry down, and she'd say, "Oh, he spent all his money. He doesn't have any money to pay for it. Can I just sign for it?" They got their clothes. And that's what she did with their clothes. She signed for them. But I said, "Alberta, you're not helping him. His dad sent him out here so he learned how to live on his money." Well, he came back the next summer, and he was married, and they had a baby. And he was still the stupidest young man.
No. No.
He would still go out and buy some artifact or some piece of jewelry or something, and wouldn't worry about what they were going to live on or anything. And he eventually went to work for Hearst Museum. I don't know how he did down there, and I've never heard anything of him since. But this girl was from a wealthy family, and she had cashmere sweaters and really beautiful things. And I hated to see cashmere come in because it was so easy to shrink it.
Oh, yes.
And it was so soft and fine and everything, but if you do the wrong thing to it, get a little extra heat on it.
It's cold and
yeah. Huh? But anyway, she would change her baby on her cashmere blanket. A cashmere sweater, and then she'd bring it down and want us to clean it. "We can't do that. Girl." She was about as smart as her husband was.
A match made in heaven.
Yeah, it was a match made in heaven, all right.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how they ever got along in the big city, and if Dad didn't help them all the time.
Sure.
Byron Harvey was. They were nice people. He was a nice man. I knew Byron Sr. and I knew Byron Jr. and I knew Byron III. So I knew three generations of that family.
What do you remember about them?
Well, Byron was the son of Fred Harvey, and he ran the company for quite a while, and then he died, and his son Byron Jr. took it over. He was a very elegant looking man. I think they were all lawyers, I'm not sure. But I remember him coming into Hutchison when I was there. And everybody was oohing and aahing, "Oh, yes, Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harvey." And I thought, boy, he's a nice-dressed man. I didn't think anything about him being Mr. Harvey. He was just a nice-dressed man. But anyway, Daggett Harvey was the next one. And Daggett was a lawyer, and he ran the company for several years. In fact, he was the one that signed the papers for Amfac to take over. He was, he always stuck up for the laundry people. He said, "You do a hard job." He used to come into town, and every once in a while he'd pop a button or something, and he'd come down, and we'd give him, like, he popped a button on the front of his pants, his suit pants, one time, and he said, "Mary, I have a little problem. I popped this button," and he said, "I need to get it sewed on." And I said, "What size waist do you have?" And I went and brought him a pair of cook's pants, and he went in the office and put them on, sat there and read a magazine, and I went back and sewed his button on his pants. And one time he had a button off up here, and I said, "Lift your chin up."
And just sewed it up right there. Oh, that's cute.
But he would put handkerchiefs in his pockets. And I said, "No matter what you do, if you find a handkerchief in Mr. Harvey's pocket, bring it to me. We'll wash it and put it back in his pocket. Don't take it," because he did that to see if we returned everything.
Really? Nice.
So we would always make sure that he got his handkerchiefs back.
Not only back, but washed and ironed and folded
ironed
up and
folded
put
up.
Back in the pocket where they came from.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But he'd bring his suit, a couple of suits sometimes when he'd come through. And he was great. He always stuck up for us. But Stuart, he was another one. He was something different. He should have been...
He was a Harvey,
he should
too,
have been Byron.
Stuart?
He should have been Byron the Third, because he was so way out. Everybody used to wear Western pants. And I had two or three pair. And in the wintertime, they were just really nice and warm, because they were actually woolens. And... they were riders, and I had on a pair one day. It was cold outside, and I wore it to work, and everybody thinks the laundry is always hot, but in the wintertime it can get cold. And so I was there, and he said, "You going riding today?" I said, "Going riding? I'm working." He said, "Well, you got riders on."
Oh.
I said, "I went into work all the time. It gets cold in here sometimes, and I get cold." And he said, "Well, okay." Turned around and walked away from me. But he did some of the... They used to not let him out of Chicago. He'd always get into trouble. His brothers watched over him. But anyway, he was something else. They never put him in charge of the company ever. He was never in charge of it. And I don't know if... Bill was Daggett's boy, or if he was Byron the second son. But he ran the La Fonda. Is that what's in Santa Fe? La Fonda?
I think so.
Anyhow, he ran the Harvey House that's in
right.
Santa Fe.
Okay.
And they had sold the company, and he took it over on his own. And he couldn't make it. And he committed suicide. Everybody was so... He was so sharp. And I don't know why he couldn't make it there, because it had such a good reputation and everything. But maybe he didn't have good help. I don't know. Or maybe he had personal problems. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we were all so shocked when he died. But Stuart... He lived in Chicago or Antioch, Illinois. I always remember Antioch because that's where my sister-in-law came from. One of them. Anyway, that's where they lived. They didn't live right in Chicago. I don't know how far Antioch is from Chicago, but it's a ways. So who else do we have? We have Leonard Wilburn. He was a young man.
Catherine Wilcox, did you know she says she was 101? Catherine Wilcox, 2001.
She was a teacher.
Was she?
Yeah. Her husband worked for the Park Service. His name was Milliot. When you go in the cemetery, they used to have two long slat-like things with their names on them. They've cut them down.
Oh.
They were so... It hit you in the face when you walked in the cemetery. It didn't last very long. Anyhow, they made him smaller. But he worked for the Park Service, and she taught at the high school.
Did Catherine? She taught at the school?
Yeah, at Grand Canyon. And their kids went to school there.
Okay.
Had a couple kids. This is James R. Willis. And he went by the name of Jack Way. And they, I think on his tombstone, it has Happy Jack Way in parentheses, and then it has his name under it. And he used to date a friend of mine, and she said, "I know he's dead. I haven't heard from him for 3 days. He never misses a night of calling me. He calls me every evening." And he didn't call her that night, and for 3 nights she didn't hear. And he was, his body was found out at Yaqui Point. He had tried to, he had taken poison, and he tried to throw his body over the edge. He got to the edge, but he didn't make it over the edge. But he died, and they buried him there. He was a guide.
Why he was a wrangler?
He didn't want to be old.
Okay.
He was so, he was, his birthday was coming up, and I guess this, I don't know if somebody in his family died when they reached that age or what, but he had it so in his head that when you hit that age, you were old and you just gave up. And he told Joe, "Oh, I'm getting so old." And Joe said, "You're not that old. What are you talking about?"
51.
You know, he wasn't that old, but he hit over 50, I guess, and he thought that was old.
But you know, in those days, I mean, this was 1948, 50, 51 was considered, I mean, you know, 50, 60.
Not in my family.
Well, you know, just thinking about how long we live now.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, 60 years ago. Interesting.
Anyhow.
What else do you remember about him?
He was a guide, mule guide, and I don't really remember very much about him, except him, I connect him with Joe, my friend Joe. And like I say, they put Happy Jack Way.
And Walter Wilson?
That was Bill Wilson.
He went by Bill.
No, he went by Walter.
He went by Walter.
That's Walter.
Okay.
But there was a Bill Nelson that was a guide, but that was long before then, and he didn't die up there, I don't think.
Well,
he died someplace else. Walter Wilson was a big man, had a good sense of humor. The people that rode his bus always came back with stories what he told them. They weren't sure whether they were true or not. Anyhow, he was a bus driver. And Anna Leigh Wing and Kittredge Wing, they were, she died young, and he was a Park Service, I think he was a superintendent someplace, but not at Grand Canyon. When they lived up there, he was younger, and she was from a society family, and when she died, we got books from the library, beautiful books. She was into art and floral arranging and everything that was beautiful.
Wow.
And her friends sent books to the Grand Canyon Library in her memory because she read, she was a voracious reader. She read everything that came in. But she had really select books, too, that she liked. Very neat lady. I didn't know him. I didn't have any reason to know him. And then the Wittebergs, Fred Wittaberg went to work as a busboy for Fred Harvey. And we have a picture of him as a very thin young man sitting in front of the fireplace at the El Devar, someplace in the mess of stuff that we have.
Where?
I don't have
picture.
It. I think it might be in Buford Myers stuff, or it might be in the Legion stuff, because he was a Legion member. He was in the Second World War.
Was he?
But his wife was she went to Stevens College. She was from a wealthy family. And she never worked, but she worked at the library, and she did things around the community. She was they were very involved. I think that they had one child that died in infancy, and they didn't have any other children. And she worked in the library, and she got the children's library started, I think. He went on to be an officer in the company, Fred Harvey Company. He was the vice president of Fred Harvey Company, and they moved to California. And then when they retired, they lived in Sedona. And I was walking down the street in Flagstaff one day, and, you know, I'm not that tall, and he was about to hear. And all of a sudden, some big arms were around me and saying, "Oh, Mary, I'm so glad to see you."
Oh, you were like, "Who's this?"
And I tried to look up, and I couldn't even see his face. All I could see was his chin. And he stepped back, and I said, "Oh, Mr. Whitaker." And anyhow, he was happy to see me. I was really, I had a conflagration with him one time. He called me up and told me to do something. And when they told me to do something, I was so afraid I'd forget, so I'd do it immediately. And so he wanted me to take something up to the Elder Bar kitchen, and I grabbed it all together and took it up there and put it on the chef's desk and went back to work. And pretty soon he called up and he said, "When are you going to bring those things? I called you an hour ago." And I said, "I already took them up there. I took them right up there." He said, "No, you didn't." I said, "Yes, I did." He said, "You're lying." And I started to cry. I couldn't quit crying. Nobody called me a liar. I never lied. I have lied, but I mean, I didn't lie then. But anyway, I had done it. And I started to cry. And this little man that worked with us, he was about as big as a skeleton. And he said, "I'm just going to..." Here this man was huge by that time. He was getting heavier all the time. And he says, "I'm going to go up there and punch him in the nose."
Oh.
He said, "I'm not going to let anybody call you a liar." And I said, "Oh, no, no, don't do that. We'll both lose our job." Pretty soon, he called back and he said, "I'm sorry." He said, "I didn't realize that you had done it right away." And he said, "I didn't go back to look because I didn't think you had time even to do it." And I said, "You asked me to do it as soon as possible. I did it." And he said, "I apologize." And they said, "Boy, if you got an apology out of Fred Whitaker, you were really getting something." Because he never apologized for anything. But his wife was a little short lady, and he was to hear. And they were a good couple. And they were pretty into the community. We had a party to raise money for the March of Dimes one time out at Tucson, and they had this real pretty secretary, and she agreed to put a fancy garter on her leg and take bids on it, and Mr. Whitaker won it. And he wouldn't take it off. He said, "Just go ahead and do it again." And darn if he didn't win again. And his wife said, "You're overbidding everybody." He said, "Well, I don't know how to get out of it now. I bid this much." And he said, "The bid should go up every time." And she said, "Well, either the next time take it off of her leg or don't bid on it to start with." But he bid on it and he took it off of her leg. But he was a good sport about that. He and Mr. Rouser used to like their fish on Friday and their beer. I think I told you about Mr. Rouser saying, "Why can't you serve us our beer?" And I said, "I can't." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "I'm not old enough to serve you beer." I said, "You'll lose your license. You'll be in trouble." Anyway, they lived at the hotel. They lived in the suite on the second floor.
In the Alto Bar?
No, the third floor. Yeah. They had a suite up there. And then they got a house. But then they left. But he started out when he was very young, and he worked his way up through the whole company. Now, people say you can't do that. He couldn't have had very much of an education. They weren't married yet, or I don't think he'd even met her yet. I don't know where they met, but anyway, they met someplace. Mrs. Whitaker wrecked a car. She was coming down from the canyon, and she had this... She was such a little woman, and she had this huge, big car. And I don't know if it was icy, I can't remember, but Mrs. Metzger was with her. And the door, she was on the passenger side, and the door came open, and then the car slammed against an embankment and it almost cut her foot off. And they took her to the hospital down here, because they were fairly close to Williams. And the doctor down here, all of our doctors around here used to be Army doctors, and this one wasn't a very good one. Anyway, he didn't clean it up or anything. And Bill Henry was our doctor for the canyon, and he was a good friend of the Metzger's. And so he came down, he had to come down to do something, and he came down and he went to see Ethel. And he just got to the door, and Art was out sitting out in the car reading something, and he went out and he said, "Art, you get her out of here, get her out of here right now. I'll call Phoenix. You take her to the hospital in Phoenix, to Good Sam, and I'll make sure she has a room there and is taken care of. She's got gangrene in her leg." And they had to amputate. And I think that she lost it right at the knee or right below the knee. Anyway, they took her leg off. And she never did have good equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't walk without a cane, and she couldn't lift her head up fast or stoop over fast or anything because she'd get real dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took over taking care of the house and fixing the meals, and Becky used to go sit on her lap, and she'd say to her, "Oh, Mrs. Metzger, you have a hard lap."
Oh.
But Mrs. Metzger loved the kids to come over, and she'd read to them. She had all kind of kids' books in her house.
Nice.
And she just loved children. It's a shame that she never had any, but here comes my friend.
Good morning.
How are you?
We've only got about four more names to go.
Oh, don't worry. How are you doing?
Good. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Elsie Warden. She was a Harvey girl, and I don't know anything about her.
Are you guys going somewhere? Are we good?
We're going to lunch.
Don't worry. Okay. We're not in no rush.
This Elsie Warden, she was a Harvey girl, and she was a hostess, I think. Anyhow, she got sick, and she wouldn't go to the doctor. And then when she did, they brought her down to here or to Flagstaff, and she died. And she wasn't, she was 42 years old, but she wouldn't take care of herself. They tried to, she wouldn't even open the door for them. They had to get the pass key and open the door when they took her to the hospital. She was so adamant that she was not going to the hospital.
Huh.
I don't know, she just had an aversion to it, I guess. This Dana Lee Wren was Anna Rotter's first husband. His dad was Judge Wren. Kenny Wright was Red Wright. He was a World War II veteran, and he had been a prisoner of war. He worked for the Santa Fe Railroad, and he was in Germany when he was a prisoner of war, and he met Maggie Margaret at the canyon, and she was, it says she was a Harvey girl. She was when she was at the canyon. She worked for Fred Harvey. But she was the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Flagstaff for a number of years after Kenny died. She went down there. Well, I guess...
it's funny because it says they both died in 60...
Yeah, they died real close together.
Well, she died in 65, that's right.
Yeah.
He was 66.
And he was
66.
In 66. Mm. Anyhow, she died in Flagstaff. And this is old Shorty Yarberry. We talked about
him
earlier.
We did. That was fun.
Yorlorsky, that name I can't pronounce.
Yvorsky.
Anyhow, I don't know him. Says he was a park ranger. But Kenny used to drive the bus out to Rawell, and Margaret was so jealous of him. If somebody sat in the front seat, she'd go pull him out of the seat and say, "You're not going to sit next to Ken." She'd pull him out of the seat.
You told me that story. That's right. In the stretch limo, going back and forth.
Limo.
Yeah, yeah.
But
fun.
He was a what do they call it when they can do rock work?
Mason.
Mason.
Mason?
He was a very good mason. He worked for the Santa Fe as a mason, a rock mason on B&B, as building and bridges.
Okay.
And
so he was busy.
Yeah, he was a busy guy. but then at night he would drive the stretch limousine.
Fun.
And sometimes if Maggie wasn't with him, well, everybody'd sing, and especially when they were coming back. Uh-huh. After you had a few, it was easy to sing, even in flat voices.
And it sounded good.
Everything sounded good when you had a few. I think we're to the bottom.
I think we're through there. Well, thank you so much for this today. This has just been a lot of fun. Next week, we're not going to be in town.
Okay.
And you're going to go see the doctor next week, and so maybe the week after, we could look at some more photographs.
Okay, I'm going to bring that book over. They're trying to get a newsletter together, and she usually takes the history book and writes an article on the history.
Okay.
And I couldn't get him to tell me when they were going to do it. He said we should have had it done. We haven't gotten to it yet. She's just been working so hard. Then he turns around and said, in the last 2 weeks, she's worked 2 days.
Oh.
So I don't know how hard she's working. But anyhow, she works over here, and she works in the hospital in Flagstaff.
Okay.
So she does my job over here, but she's so much faster that she only works a few days over here, sometimes only on Friday. But I don't know. He keeps the books up, though, and I used to keep the books and, you know, all of that. But she doesn't do all that.
Well, we'll see you in a couple Tuesdays then.
Okay.
And thank you again for this.
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
And I will get that book over here. And I kept thinking I'd walk over there and get it. I get to the door and I'm like, I think I can walk around.
That's a long distance.
Well, actually, it's just next door, but
still
when you don't
when you're
you can't use your leg very well,
that's
you can't.
Exactly right.